Celebrity phone once again lighting up. I never know who's calling in. It's always a surprise. Hello, you're on the air.
Jeremy, it looks like they finally got my letters, and they're finally taking you off the air.
Okay, this is the thing. This could be anybody ever. Let's just be honest. Any of our listeners have probably petitioned. Can you be more specific? Maybe give me a clue.
Okay, think Guy Smiley meets Ryan Seacrest.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Mulrooney, everybody. Well, thanks for calling it. I, you're almost on the show more than I am. It's great. I appreciate you making the time.
Final time, I would not miss it.
Okay, so let's rewind, though. I mean, 15 years, long time. Where were you in your broadcast career 15 years ago? And does it seem like it was yesterday?
15 years ago, we were in the early days of E-Talk. I'm pretty sure Canadian Idol was also on, so it was a busy, busy time. It was an exciting time, because as we were building that show, we were also helping sort of build a little bit of the Canadian entertainment scene infrastructure. You know, this notion of red carpets was not something that was really done, let alone, you know, sending outlets from all over the country. There was an excitement over what we could do as a country. And I think we're well on our way. We have a lot of Canadians that find success in Canada and then export it, like, say, Schitt's Creek. Stars who make it elsewhere and come home and are proud to do so. A guy like Ryan Reynolds, who always waves the flag. And I think when you put all of that together, it makes for a really optimistic future for Canadian entertainment.
It's also crazy to think even just how broadcasting, how that landscape has changed, because you talk about the early days of Canadian Idol. I mean, I remember the press room. At the back of the press room, you had the major, you know, daily newspapers, the local TV stations, the phone banks where you plugged in your modem to file your report. I mean, you know, reporters certainly weren't asking for the Wi-Fi password, right? That wasn't even a thing. And you know, we weren't doing selfies. I just kind of think about how things have changed. It's a completely different time now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when Canadian Idol aired, it was on once, and that was it. You never saw it again. Now everything exists on streaming platforms forever. There's no such thing as missing something anymore. It's always there. It's always available. And that changes people's expectations, I think. There's still certain shows that even on streaming platforms, there's still this communal, semi-communal viewing experience that happens. You know, when a big show drops on one of the big streaming networks, everyone seems to gravitate to it at about the same time. It's different, but it's still a shame. And, you know, the fact that so much has migrated to online, the fact that, you know, in a lot of ways, the access that a show like E-Talk probably has these days, they bypass the publicists altogether. They're the gatekeepers of the stars, and they go right to their Instagram, their TikTok, and their Facebook, and they learn the truth from that person almost directly. So that's a big, big change.
And I think something that we've seen, you know, you mentioned the streaming services, that's where award shows have kind of got muddied, right? Because now there's so much, I don't know if the word is competition, but I mean, everybody can make a film, right? And there's really been a push to have that diversity. Obviously, there's been the scandals and things over the years. And I think maybe that's where people are losing interest, because if I haven't heard of the nominees as a TV viewer, you know, do I want to spend 3 hours watching stuff that I've never even heard about? So I wonder if that's maybe where showbiz veterans kind of feel their industry is changing, maybe not for the good. You know, the movie doesn't have that prestige anymore, if that makes sense.
Well, I don't know if the movies don't have prestige. I know that the notion of working on television has a newfound prestige. I mean, you look at the fact that a television show was able to bring on the likes of Meryl Streep for the first time, but Kevin Costner made his television debut on Yellowstone. I mean, television these days I don't believe it's ever been better, and there's never been more of it that's been this good. And also these shows, in a lot of cases, require far less time from these stars than they used to. You know, a network right. television show had a commitment of at least 8 months, right, which only gave you 4 months to go home, relax, maybe if you're lucky, do a small independent film, and that was it. Now you can get these stars for short-run seasons of like 4, 6, 8 episodes. They're not even required to be there for the duration of that shoot, which really frees up these stars to do much, much more with their schedules, which means you're able to go out there and get the biggest stars in the world for your television project. And the fact that that show if it's on something like Amazon Prime or Netflix, it already has, it doesn't have to be sold internationally because it already exists internationally.
Right.
You put all of that together, and there's no stigma for major movie stars to work on television anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Canadian entertainment reporters, we heard about the glitz and glamour of Hollywood before going there. And you know, we've both covered our fair share of events in L.A. Do you remember your first entertainment event in L.A.? What was your impression? Or maybe the bigger question, did it live up to your expectation?
So my two earliest memories that really stick out, the first one was my very first junket. And it wasn't in L.A., it was in New York, and it was for the Muhammad Ali biopic starring Will Smith, Ali. And I sat down and I told Will Smith that this was my very first interview ever. And I got halfway through my first question and he interrupted and he screamed, "Well, that's a stupid question, Ben." And it caught me off guard, and then we both had a big laugh and continued on. I'll never forget that. And then the next one, I'm sure it was in my first few years. I'd have to go back and see what the date was. But it was for the movie, what was it called? A Minority Report.
Okay.
And I was waiting to go do an interview with one of the members of the cast sitting next to Roger Ebert. And I was furiously going over my notes to make sure that I had everything ready. And he looked at me and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm just trying to get my questions straight." And he said, "Let me tell you, Ben, if you can't go into a room and talk to the star of a movie that you just saw yesterday for 3 minutes about that movie with curiosity and excitement and intelligent questions, then this is not the job for you." And it really put it into perspective for me, and it reminded me the people at home aren't looking for the smartest question. They're looking for memorable moments. They're looking for moments where you connect with the star in a way that elicits some sort of connection that they're not going to see on every single one of those shows where a different journalist has access to the same star for the same reason. And it really put everything into perspective for me that it's not rocket science, it's not brain surgery, but it does require the ability to just connect with somebody, if only for a minute or two.
Absolutely. I remember, yes, nervousness on my first red carpet. And then after doing them for a few years, I remember being able to pinpoint whose first red carpet it was, because they had, again, like a notepad of notes. And then there was even one person who was kind of standing there reading the questions. "I understand you have a new album. It's called..." And I just thought, "Oh my God, I'm embarrassed for you."
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. Because sometimes you can be over-prepared on those red carpets.
Yeah.
And you can have so much information in your head that it needs to come out. And unfortunately, it comes out in a way... like, it comes out in the form of overly complicated questions. And the next thing you know, you've asked a question that the only answer to the question is yes or no, where you've got, you know, let's go back to Will Smith, and you say, "Will, welcome back to the Oscars. You're here for Muhammad Ali, and I read that this was your first nomination, but you really put the work in, and you added 30 pounds of muscle." And then you look at you and go, "Yes." Now, that's a terrible interaction with the star. You know, you want them to say all that stuff. So I also learned that sometimes the key is to go in with just a little less information and a little more confidence that that's okay.
Have you had a moment where, and this is probably where people don't understand a red carpet, you know, you're one of dozens of people there doing interviews, you're just the next one in line, right? It's like a conveyor belt, they go from spot to spot. When you're first starting out, most of these people have no idea who you are, but they seem like they care. Have you had a moment where they recognized you and remembered you and you never thought they would?
Yeah, I mean, it happened all the time with Tom Cruise. He's the champ at those red carpets. And it's always a wonderful thing because he attacks those red carpets with a ferocity and an intensity and an enthusiasm that you don't often see. Another person who did something similar would be Will Ferrell. But Will Ferrell has an interesting trick. What he has is he's got somebody with him who will whisper to him who the person is and something about them, so that when he walks up to them, he's able to say, "Hey, Ben, how's your new dog, Bruce Wayne?" And it sort of reminds me of the assistant character on Veep, who's always whispering into Julia Louis-Dreyfus's ear before she meets somebody. But for my purposes, I don't care whether we're best friends or it just looks like we're best friends, so long as it translates into a really great moment for the audience.
What's the most Hollywood thing you've ever done or bought just because you could?
Well, just keep in mind, I'm working Canadian television, so our budgets are far less extravagant. But I think a couple of times earlier on in my career, I might have splurged on a suite. Like if I was going down to Los Angeles or New York for a movie junket, I might have upgraded myself to have a suite so that Jessica and I could have a fun weekend. I think I bought a flat screen TV when they first came out. Not that there's a whole lot to watch in that aspect ratio.
Yeah.
I think probably a flat screen and a hotel suite, I'd have to say.
I remember my first time covering Idol in Toronto. I was a little cocky, right? The guy from Winnipeg covering this big event in Toronto. So I was staying near the university. I bought a U of T sweatshirt. Whatever. And then every time I wear it, people are like, "Oh, you went to U of T?" I'm like, "Yeah, for lunch." I stopped by Honest Ed's. Toronto people will know what I'm talking about. And then I just said to myself that I've got to buy something expensive because I'm here and because I can. I went to Banana Republic, bought a $140 sweater. Remember, I'm on Winnipeg money, and so that's a big deal at the time. And I took all these pictures of this sweater, price tag still on it. I had never worn it. It was years and years. And it's like I was waiting for the perfect moment. Or maybe it was just because it was too expensive. I didn't want to ruin it, by wearing it. So do you know all those years later what the perfect moment was?
What's that?
It was when I got the invite to cover Betty White's 90th birthday.
Oh, wow.
And I'm packing, figuring out what to wear, and then I opened the drawer, and it was like that moment in like TV and movies, the sweater had like that glistening halo. You're a producer, I don't know what that's called. And then I hear the angelic, do you have a story like that? Kind of just like,
I do, yeah, I do. I go back to Tom Cruise. It was for a movie that he had done with Cameron Diaz. I think it's called like Night and Day. And we went to Spain, and part of the junket was this fun thing where we'd get in a car with Cameron Diaz, and she was chasing Tom Cruise, who was on a motorcycle just ahead of her, and we were drifting through these narrow streets. It was either Barcelona or Seville, I'm not quite sure. And when we got done with the run, you get out of the car, and it's tricked out with cameras, obviously. When I got out of the car, he put his arm around me and he said, "Listen, I'm moving to Toronto to be with my wife," and that was Katie Holmes at the time, "and I'm bringing our daughter, and I'd love to know places for us to go and places, things for us to do." So I said, "Put me in touch, point to the person I should talk to." I assumed I wouldn't be dealing directly with him. "And I will make sure that I get this person a complete list of restaurants and fun places, as well as contact information of people that you can call who can offer you sort of the privacy that you probably need when you want to do these things." And so I took care of that when I got home and, put together a file of all sorts of restaurants and fun kids' activities and locations in the city where they'd be left alone and that sort of thing. And this was over 10 years ago because I remember my wife was still pregnant with the twins. I came home from work one day and my wife said, who are Tom and Katie? And I said, "I don't know who Tom and Katie are." It was months later. And she said, "Well, because we just got this giant trunk full of toys from Tom and Katie." And I opened it up and there was a note and it was like, exploding with toys. And I looked at it, I was like, Jess, I think this is Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. I think they were thanking us for that thing. And so we still have the, I don't know if we have the toys anymore because we've had a lot of grandkids in our house that we pass them along to, but we still have the trunk. And it was one of those moments where, like, that only happens if you have a job like this.
Absolutely, yeah, and so we've got to wrap this up because they're yelling at me, but what are they going to do, fire me? Really, you know, two more things. So maybe you've already answered this. Which celebrity was totally different than what you expected?
Which celebrity was totally different than what I expected? You know, someone I really got along well with was Awkwafina.
Oh, yeah.
Who's now going to be in the new Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings with Toronto Simu Liu. You know, she's... Her name is Nora, but she goes by Awkwafina. And I had seen a lot of her videos online, and I had seen some smaller roles that she had had in movies. And when I met her, she was so down to earth and so genuine and so wonderful, and just a regular person who just happened to be super talented in what she did. And it was just a really happy surprise because I didn't expect it.
Finally, we know in journalism they always say you do what you got to do to get the story, right? You, whatever you got to do. What was the greatest length you ever went to get a story or an interview?
Well, you know, fortunately we have a team. We've always had teams at Your Morning and eTalk and wherever I've worked of great producers who do most of that legwork. But every now and then, just because an interview is set up doesn't mean it's going to happen the way it was anticipated. And if you've ever had to interview Mariah Carey, then you know that you're going to be waiting a long time. And I think I waited something like 6 or 7 hours past the time I was supposed to be interviewing her just to get the interview. But once it happened, it was a glorious interview. What I find is almost everybody who's ever interviewed Mariah Carey has a story about how long they waited. It's like this rite of passage. You've got to get through that gauntlet in order to get that interview. And I don't know that in any other case, if it was any other star, We would tell these stories sort of with a negative spin, but when it's Mariah Carey, you say it with a smile on your face because it's just part of her lore. And once I got an interview with her, it was delightful.
It almost makes you think if she doesn't make you wait, there's trouble.
There's trouble. What did you do wrong? Why don't I warrant the 3 or 4 hour time delay?
Oh, well, Ben, you know, I always love chatting with you. You've celebrated a whole bunch of my broadcast milestones, and you've always made time, so I really appreciate this. And you know what? When I'm no longer doing traditional or legit broadcasting, I hope you'll still answer my calls.
I promise I will. on to bigger and better things, Jeremy. Thanks so much, and all the best, and congratulations.
Well, Ben Mulroney from CTV. I'm going to do this from CTV's Canadian Idol. One last time on the radio with me. Thanks, Ben.